The Press Box is here to catch you up on the latest media stories. Hosted by Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker, these guys have the insight on the biggest stories you care about. Check out The Press Box on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
It was like you were crossing names off a list. You were like John Wick in it around.
Hi everyone, welcome to Writer's House on Ringer SC. Hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang leaving Arsenal and what this means for the striker situation, plus something personal regarding the Bournemouth versus Boreham Wood game, and we'll also answer a couple of questions at the end. And my guest is Mr. Ryan Hun.
Hey man.
How are you, Ryan Hun?
I'm all right, thanks man. Hey, just you and I, like the Arsenal front line.
Yeah, but this is what happens. We do this sometimes and we put the world to rights on a regular basis. And now we're doing it on the pod as well. So here we go again.
How are you?
I'm not bad, to be honest. Right, I've been having dreams. I'm telling Nance, I'm having the dreams again of playing football. So let me tell you the dreams so as you can see what's happening. So there was one dream I had a few days ago where it reminded me of Spinal Tap where they couldn't find a stage. And I couldn't get to the pitch. I couldn't get to the football pitch. And I was in a house. I don't know what was happening. I was trying to get, I had the kit on. I was getting to the football pitch and I couldn't get to the pitch. And then the one I had last night was I was playing in my old Supermort kind of tournament, what I used to play in before I started playing for Palace. We was waiting to start our football match. Like it was like a convey. So that team played, then we had to play. And I was just waiting and waiting. I thought, what does it signify? What's the dream signify? What am I waiting for? Why can't I find the pitch?
I don't know.
I'm searching for something.
I don't know, but I had this just reminded me of this very, very realistic dream that I had the other day. Well, I say realistic is that what happened wasn't realistic, but it felt real, right?
Right.
So Emirates 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. Mm. I was playing. We beat Burnley 2-0. And it was 1-0 until the 89th minute. And then I picked the ball up like deep in our half and basically Burnley were knackered. So there was loads of space.
Right.
And I ghosted through most of the like we broke basically.
Yeah.
And then I squared it for Emil Smith Rowe, who put it away and sealed the game. But then after the game, so I took my boots off and I had my sliders on. It was so realistic. I had my shin pads in my hand, had my sliders on. And I came to see you and Roscoe. Right in the box, and then I realized that apparently for some reason Mikel had us doing a training session that night even after the game, and I walked back down and Mikel was with the whole squad and they were walking out like a school trip. Like he was the teacher and all the players were the pupils.
And were you late?
And I was late. And I was like, oh Mikel, I'm really sorry, I was talking to Wrighty, I'll go and get my bag. And he was just like, all right, be quick. But then they'd locked the dressing room. So I had to run. I was running around outside Emirates, like inside the Emirates thing with my, just like, I need to get my kit. And basically when I woke up from the dream, I was stressing that Mikel was going to bollock me.
Yeah, but the thing is, while I had the dream where I couldn't find a pitch, where I was doing my Spinal Tap, where they can't find a stage, I remember when I woke up, I remember being so like anxious.
Yeah.
anxious. I was just anxious. I don't know what it is, but I keep having these dreams where I'm not getting to it. Mm. I'm not getting to it. So whatever, I don't know what I'm working on. I mean, I'm going to have to speak to Roscoe and find out what we're striving for, because at the moment I feel like I'm desperate to get to it. I can't get to it. That's what me and Nance tried to, work out. But I remember when, God rest her soul, when I used to have dreams, my mum used to say, oh, that's such and such. And then she'd put a bet on.
Wow. Gambling on your dreams.
That's what it was.
Oh, man.
You know what, Rai? Can I just talk about Aubameyang, please?
Yeah, let's do it, man. How do you feel about this, by the way? I mean, for those who have been under a metaphorical rock, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is now a Barcelona player.
For free.
For free. Yeah.
What we got to clear up as well with him is that we're talking about somebody, he's taken a massive cut as well to go there. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, everyone has to go to Barca at the moment.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's willing to do that. And, you know, with all the people that are saying, yeah, he just signed a contract and just clocked off, you know what I mean? He just didn't want to play. He got offered the same money as what he's on at Arsenal to go to Saudi Arabia. Mm. We're talking about somebody who's a very colourful individual, plays football with a smile on his face. When it's not right, you can see it's not right for him. And it's not about the money. The sad thing for me with him, and unfortunately, because he's himself, that's what I want to finish there. Because he's himself, he's very colourful. You know, people can easily kind of like get that mixed up with him being this, like when he was coming to this country,
yeah.
Ryan, everybody talked about him like some party animal. He's always out. He's not like that at all. He's a family man. Mm. A family man that likes colourful clothes and colourful cars, but scores goals. Now, the saddest thing for me, Ryan, is that we don't know what's happened. You know what I mean? I'm not really bothered to know what's happened now with him and Mikel, what couldn't be healed. It's in a time where we need goals, and I'm we'll go on to it, how we're going to get them. But in a time when we need goals, when you see other managers who can get into that, not the gray area of management where, okay, it's black and white, this guy's maybe out of order, but I need him, so I'm going to take it, like Conte done with Costa. Mm. And then, you know, they won the league. Next day, sends him a text. You're not welcome at the club anymore. I could see that as something that I would probably like to do, simply because the club is more important and the advancement of the club is more important than anything. So I'm quite disappointed that somewhere along the line something couldn't have been resolved, but it's not resolved. Mm. He's gone, and I'm quite sad to see him go.
There's almost like two sides to this for me. So I'm sad to see him go because I think when he signed the contract, you spoke to him quite a lot about that, and mm-hmm. and for me, it really felt like he wanted to. That idea of legacy and maybe being someone who they might put a statue of you outside the stadium. Yeah. Like it felt like he really wanted that, actually. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make a bit of a charge at the goal record. Not that mm-hmm. I think he was probably going to break Thierry's, but I remember you saying that, like, I would gladly be third if Pierre was second.
Yeah. Getting us stuff, winning us stuff. No problem for me.
There's been such a huge turnover and such a huge amount of transition at Arsenal in the last couple of years since Oba signed his contract. There's part of me that is sympathetic to Oba's maybe drop in form because it coincided a little bit with Arsenal trying to move away from the old school way of playing into this new way that Mikel wants them to play. But also just a little bit sorry for him on a personal level that, I mean, I should clarify this. This is me saying this without having any knowledge of what it actually is.
Yeah. Like, me too.
So me too. You know, obviously if it comes out that there's some really ropey shit going on, then I might revise my opinion. But but
up until then.
Yeah. Someone who's in the dark about it, you know, I just feel a real shame for him that he couldn't make that charge, because it did seem to be a genuine thing for him. And also, you know, ironically, and I've heard a lot of other people say this, like, if Aubameyang wasn't Arsenal would be making a move from this window, because he's the kind of striker that Arsenal could do with on a short-term basis. Yeah. So whatever it is that couldn't be healed, that's a shame for me. But I think that if you look at what happened with AFCON as well, with Gabon at AFCON, it makes me feel that maybe this isn't such an Arsenal-specific issue. And that's pure speculation without knowing.
It seems very definite with everything, though. The way... There's no way back there. Obviously, what's happened with AFCON and Gabon, him coming back, but then Barcelona taking him on a free, and taking the cut what he's taken. And you say we don't know what it is, but again, what I'm saying about Arsenal, it just feels so definite. From that's it, bam, out, gone. That's finished. I didn't think it, if I'm going to be totally honest, right, I didn't think it would come. I thought it'd be something that would be resolved simply because we're talking about, what, a year since he signed that deal with, if there is something wrong with what he was doing with the lateness, I don't know what it is. Cause like you say, we don't know what it is. Right.
Even then, you don't know.
No, I don't know. And you know what I mean? I'm in touch
with
the guy.
Lip delivery.
It's tight. It's tight. And you just look at it and you think with, if the way it's, the way everything's gone, I can't understand deep down why something couldn't happen simply because he's only just signed. So if everything was going on before, there would have been a lead up of misdemeanors for the manager to maybe say, you know something, let's not sign him because I believe that what's happened up to this point, he's been doing this. And if that carries on, you know, we're signing him for this much money, what's going to happen? And it just seems like if you knew that there's things that he's been doing that you don't like, and you know what I mean, this is a chance to not sign again for him to leave, then why did we sign him for so much money, put so much into him, and then a year later, he's gone?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you look at the minutes per goals this season, if you in all comms, let's take out Eddie Nketiah and Charlie Patino, right? Because they're not regular players.
No.
But Aubameyang's minutes per goal is 159. 7 goals, 2 assists.
Mm-hmm.
Played 15 games. Emile Smith-Rowe's minutes per goal is 171.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who isn't a striker, that's a pretty decent return.
It's a very good return.
Martinelli's is 335, but remember, a lot of that was kind of integrating and getting him in. So in the short term, it hurts Arsenal, obviously, not getting someone in. If there was a genuine charge for the top four to be done, obviously a striker would have been super handy.
Mm-hmm.
But also, strikers need time to integrate as well. And maybe with Martinelli's return and regular appearances, Nicola Pepe coming back from AFCON after a pretty good AFCON, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether Arteta has kind of looked at the squad. And this is what I think, maybe we'll get on it in a little bit, but this is one of my little Rilo Ren conspiracy theory reasons why Mikel might have gone to see Stan, actually.
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure it was kind of like a, we need someone, sanction it conversation.
Because Stan could easily say, with him going to see him, well, I just sanctioned you giving this fella 350 grand. Where's he going? What's going on?
I wonder whether Mikel has looked at the pieces that he has and actually thinks this unit's kind of working okay at the moment. And I wonder whether he feels that he could move Martinelli central and play Martinelli up front. Because then if you think about it, Pepe coming back from AFCON, that's a backup in a wide position. Also, I think Pepe could potentially work in a two up top if Mikel wants to go 4-4-2 sometimes. I know he sometimes has played two up top as almost like a shadow striker, because Pepe is this kind of chaos agent. You know, he doesn't really fit into the rest of the side, but he will get goals.
You hope. But the thing is that up to this point, he's not used Pepe in any other way that makes me say, well, why all of a sudden is he's got love for Pepe and Pepe's still here? I think Pepe might be on a kind of last chance saloon with him, the amount of games he hasn't played.
I don't think he's going to hang around. I don't think he's a long-term thing for Arsenal at all, but you might see him play a role for the rest
of the season. Well, I'd like to see something from him, because like when you watch him, I know it's in the African Cup of Nations, and I feel that the defending, and it's even harder with them guys, and how athletic and how good they are and how intelligent some of them defenders are. You've got to do a lot more. And I think when you watch him, he's done it. Why aren't we getting that out of him? If that means to play him as a false nine, play him in a position where he's just free, gets on the ball, runs at people. It seems to me that Mikel is doing something where he's got to take a chance on that, because what I'm feeling is the goals are going to have to come from Emile Smith-Rowe, Saka, hopefully Martinelli. Whereas we're not saying that any of them are proven, like Aubameyang was proven. We're talking about somebody that frightened defenders, somebody that, you know, when he's playing well in his pomp, he takes half chances. We've seen that. And now it seems to me, with the way we're playing, and what worries me is when I watched us against Burnley, and I know we didn't have our full quota of players, but I didn't see anything in that team that made me feel like, oh yeah, I see what he's doing, because we'll break them down. He'll get that chance and he'll do this and that. Lack of missed chances.
Yeah, but that game really could have easily gone another way. Like, a couple of those chances go away, it's 2-0.
Yeah, but Wright didn't. This is the thing,
yeah,
Wright.
I know it didn't. But I think, like, you see people like Thomas Frank and Thomas Tuchel after games where they've maybe not got the best result, but they've looked at the performance and they're like, no, the performance was good and we missed some chances. The chances will come, like, another day they go in. As a manager, you're more encouraged by creating and not converting as opposed to not creating at all. But you said something really interesting there about the false nine thing.
Yeah.
I wonder whether this is Mikel's plan going forward. I wonder whether actually he's like, I don't need an out-and-out number nine at the moment, or I think that I can, you know, move Martinelli central. Because if you think that you think how fluid that potential front four can be. Emil Smith Rowe, Gabby Martinelli, Bukayo Saka, and let's say Ødegaard as well. Throw Ødegaard in there.
Yeah.
Smith Rowe, Ødegaard, Martinelli, Saka. That front four is as dynamic, exciting, and a young front four as anyone else has got in the league.
Yeah.
The understanding that those guys are building.
I wonder if he's had a chat with them.
Yeah, I wonder whether he has. He's I'd love to know. Like, yep. You're my Beatles, man. You're my Beatles. And the maybe Aubameyang was like Pete Best. He's like, we've got to get this drummer out. We've got to get Ringo in.
Yeah, but Ryan, when they go to Dubai, that's the place where, because obviously the plan's in motion, Edu himself, all doing what they're doing, the plan's in motion. Do you think, I'd love to think that he sat them all down and explained to them, that's happened. You are the guys. You are the Beatles. You're going to make it happen.
Because think about it. I'd love to be there in that chat. For the sake of having a widely reported 350 grand a week metaphorical elephant in the metaphorical room, if you clear that out, there is no kind of like shadow hanging over it.
Mm-hmm.
In the short term, it leaves Arsenal short up front. Absolutely. Going forward, that is a long time that you can get those guys to go together if you invest. I'm not saying that it's all going to be amazing, because I think this season, I wonder whether, for example, like the meeting with Stan was kind of to break down the short and long-term goals.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if it's like, yeah, we could get a striker in here, but we're probably going to overpay and we're starting to clear out. If you look at Arsenal's wage structure now, once Laka goes, and maybe Pepe as well, you've then got this more of a structure that is akin to those kind of early 2010s Wenger teams in terms of pay structure, where everyone's a little bit more in tune.
In and around each other.
You've got a gigantic Mesut Ozil or, you know, a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and stuff like that. So I wonder whether this is part of the process where he's saying, like, yeah, it might hurt us, but actually the goal isn't necessarily Champions League this year. The primary target was Europe.
Mm.
And you do it and you break it down and go step by step, because summer is the best time to retool.
For value for money. But then we're talking about freeing up that money. And you, when you look at who's gone out as well, obviously Aubameyang's big money. Kolasinac was on quite good money as well. So when you talk about freeing up, that's probably $500,000 plus a week.
Yeah, I'd say million.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think you like to think that if you are going to buy a big striker in the summer, then Arsenal maybe saving the big money is what they might pay out to go with that striker, then give them the money. I don't know if we're not going to have to pay somebody in excess of 200 grand a week if we're going to try and go for that striker, or
If they're smart, they won't need to, though.
Well, it depends on if. You know what I mean? You've got Lacko might be going, Eddie might be going, freeing up a lot of money. If Pepe can kick in with the rest of those guys, with the other four, and then somebody starts really, like, let's say Martinelli gets on a 10, just starts getting those goals what we all believe that he can get. Emil Smith Rowe continues scoring at his rate. Saka's doing his stuff. Pepe kicks in. He's taking a massive chance on hoping that works, but where's the backup for that? Just in case, because like we say, Laka might be going, you know, Eddie looks like he's going to be going, and, you know, I don't know what's happening with Florian Balogun, you know, at Middlesbrough.
I think this is a very smart move.
Go on.
Balogun was in this middle ground of being like killing everyone at under 23 level, but senior football was a
It's a big step, seems like.
The transition was too big. The Championship at Middlesbrough is perfect for him. Like, that is a tough league to play in, and that's a really good league to develop in. He wasn't ready to be Arsenal's guy yet. He wasn't ready to be starting games up front for Arsenal. And to be honest, he wasn't really ready, I don't feel, to be featuring regularly in a senior Arsenal side yet.
Not even on the bench?
No, I don't think so. Because when he did come, when he did play, that's a big transition. Developing in the Championship, coming back into the Premier League after having some really, really, really good minutes and experience in the Championship, I think was a very smart move and one that both the club and him, he needed.
Yeah, I remember watching him against Brentford, and everything what he does as a striker, what he probably does in the 23s, it just seemed like when you do it there, you needed to ramp it all up. You needed to, you know, whereas it will come in and you feel like, bam, I've got time, but you needed to ramp it up. You need to take it to like max. Because even at Brentford, he looked, lost. Couldn't get on the ball. Could, you know, everything he was doing. Then when he did get a chance, he kind of rushed it. Couldn't quite get his shot off in the box. But maybe you're right, Ryan. Maybe because I'm desperate for him to be there. Because I'm thinking, Eddie, for me, I haven't seen enough with Eddie coming off the bench, looking hungry enough to challenge two strikers. Obviously, Oboe wasn't in form. Lacka is not scoring at the rate he was scoring. And Eddie being the guy who's been out on loan, he's bridged that gap. He knows what it's like to be on away on loan and scoring goals and coming back. And it just looked like he's somebody that I don't know where his head's at in respect of, did he see the opening? Did he see that there is an opening at a club of Arsenal's size to step in and be the guy? And you know, when I watched Eddie, whether he come off the bench or whether he started, it just didn't look like it. And then for me, watching him against Forest, watching him in the FA Cup against Forest, where it was a tough game for us with the team we put out, but what you do in those games, you keep it tight, you defend very well, and you hope that your guy takes a half chance. He didn't take it. Although Bakayo had a chance as well, he didn't take it, but Eddie is a goal scorer that should, and those are the opportunities and chances, Ryan, that I think that he should have taken, that would give him a berth in the team, that would give him a chance to nick those goals and continue to score those goals. But like, I don't think he recognized the opportunity. I don't know, because now it looks like he wants to leave. It looks like he wants to leave, and he probably will. And he's missed the chance. There was a chance there.
There was a chance there. I was thinking about Eddie the other day, and I think he might have actually come through a decade too late. Like, I think if he comes through in 2010, he probably suits that Arsenal a little better than he suits this one, because they play in a slightly different way.
He could get on the end of things, yeah. He could really get on the end of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, what Arsenal need from a striker now is a lot more than just 6-yard box. They kind of need someone who is like a Lacka Aubameyang hybrid in a way. And that's why I think the Balogun thing is interesting, because Balogun is a finisher, but he's also, I think, more dynamic than Eddie.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about somebody who got released from Chelsea when he was 14. He went straight to Arsenal a week later. They recognised something. You have to dig into that. You got to go back into that and think, right, they recognise something. I'm going to work hard to get to this. He's done it. And it seems to me, somewhere along the line, the hunger to be the guy, to be the number one and be that guy, I don't know where it went, because when I watched him, I'm saying, Even if the chances were, you should be running around to the point, you get that ball, I'm going to have a shot. Everything should be geared towards letting the fans and let people see, because that I'm going to do everything I can to score. When I went to Arsenal, I didn't expect to start, but I knew I was at the place I needed to be, Ryan. And I remember, I didn't expect to start the game at Leicester, but all I said to myself is, because people were saying, oh, he's going to come off the bench. All I said to myself was, like with the FA Cup with Palace, when I get on there, I'm getting it out of my feet, I'm shooting. I'm going to let the fans know, I'm going to let everybody know that I am here to score goals, and I'm going to get my opportunity to do it, and I'm going to shoot. I started the game, scored a goal, bam, it all went from there. But for me, I recognised what could happen for me if I score goals here, and I'm going to do everything I can. I chase the defenders, I chase them down so as they want me in the team. And then if the chances come, when the games are tight, you nick a goal, bam, you start to build that. That doesn't just come. Yeah. You build that. You have to recognise that. You have to go into the Nottingham Forest game knowing these lot at home, they're going to be fucking tough. We've got Charlie Patino, young guy playing. Again, he's somebody that's like, whoa, what's going on? Somebody that's killing it in the 23s. What's going on? Okay, this is a perfect game for them to learn. This is the Championship. We're not even talking about a team that's blasting it, killing it in the championship. This is football. It's not the Premier League.
It's a tough league, man.
You have to win. Exactly.
It's like when NBA players, like young NBA players go to the Euro League. Or like, you know, you look at someone like Luka Doncic, who like came in as a rookie in the NBA and absolutely killed it because he'd been playing for Real Madrid for years against like old, hard dudes in the Euro League. And that's what the championship is like. Not necessarily old, but it is a tough league.
Fucking tough. When I went to Palace and we was in the second division, when I came to the first division, I remember everybody talking about, well, let's see if he's going to do it, see if he could do it there. What I found with the, and it was the second division then, it was so tough that when I got into the first division, I remember my second game at home, we drew with Man United, I scored. I just had more time. You know what I mean? I just felt like I had more time because the defenders were different. They weren't flying at you. They say, right, he's got good possession. Let me force him that way. And then you get it and you pass it back. And I'm thinking, I was expecting to get fucking clattered there. So then what you work on is the movement of it. But you've got to see, whoa, this is, yes, it's hard, but I can do this.
Can I ask you something on this?
Yeah.
I remember you and I had a conversation once. It might have even been for the podcast. And you were saying about how like you constantly felt like you were making up for lost time because you got into it so late and you got your opportunity so late. Mm. Every opportunity was just like, this has to be it. I have to take this. Yep. This has to be it. Imagine that you'd signed for the club at 9 years old and you were constantly being told that you were going to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember you saying you played angry.
Yeah.
Especially for those early years. And well, I mean, pretty much all of your career, especially in those early years. And that was such a big part of what made you deadly as a striker.
Would I have the fire if I was that age?
Yeah. I know it's a bit of a hypothetical.
No, but it's a good question, right? Because I'll be honest with you. I don't think I would.
Yeah.
I don't think I would because what shaped me was the rejection and feeling like you're not good enough. You know, playing Sunday morning football and then feeling again without knowing that I'm improving all the time, getting stronger. I've been playing against men since I was 15, men. And so when I got and dealing with some really bad players who are trying to hurt you because it's Sunday morning football. And what I learned from the rejection and playing in that kind of football, then you get to the professional levels. And when I started training with Palace and I had to train with the reserves and the first team, Ryan, and I'm not being disrespectful, I thought, my God, is this it? Is this it? Because at first, once I got my fitness, I just blasted past those players. I was training with the first team after the first 6 weeks regularly. And the reason why I don't believe I would have been the same at 9 and 10, especially if people are saying, oh, you're so great, is because I'd lose the focus. I would lose it. Because what gave me the focus is once I got in there and realized, oh my God, this is amazing. All I got to do now is work on being even better at playing football. And this is when I talk about learning about striking. It was like going to university, right? And I had to learn all that stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, this is amazing. So I think that the rejection made me work even harder than those guys because those guys were in it from the age of 10 and that. And they're lax. Oh yeah, I'm okay. They'd leave at 12. We start training at half 10. They'd be gone. Reserve players would be gone from Palace at 12 quarter past. I couldn't believe it because remember, I come off the site. I started at 7. Sometimes depending on how it went, you have to finish before dark or you have to finish before a certain time. And getting home at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and then waking up at 6 again. These guys are starting at 10:30, finishing at 12, and leaving to go where? I couldn't understand it. So they bounced, bro. And then I realized that, well, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go if I go home now? What am I going to do? Sit around. And I just got balls out. Just started playing balls. I remember Peter Prentice, the guy who came over to me and said, my name's Peter Prentice and I represent Crystal. Remember I told you that? I represent Crystal Palace Football Club and we would like to offer you a 2-week trial at our football club. We think that you might do well here. Something like, I remember it took me about, I went back, had some lunch and it took me like 10, 15 minutes to say to him, Peter, would I be able to use some balls? He said, of course you fucking can. Just go and get them. Just go and do what you want. And that's when I just started to curl stuff with my left foot, curl it in with my right foot. And then I was able to get some youth team players to cross it and do stuff. I would stay at the training ground till 3 and 4 o'clock, till some of the times they'd have to tell me to come in.
Because you were on like you were on a mission.
Yeah, but I was on a mission.
I said it to Musa. I think I said it to Musa. It was like until 94. It was like you were taking. It was like you were crossing names off a list. You were like John Wicking it around.
John. Yeah, but right. I never ever at no stage did I ever feel like I caught up. Even when I won the Golden Boot, I scored, simply because when I looked at like Shearer and Andy Cole and Sheridan, everybody was four and 5 and 6 years younger than me.
Yeah.
You know, so this is why I was like even I didn't realize that scoring all those goals in the '30s, like Jamie, I think Jamie Vardy's just equaled it. Scoring all those goals in the '30s was a thing until they started to put it up there, because I realized how much older I was than everybody else and how, you know, the playing catch up to a certain extent, I caught up because I got to the Premier League, got to the first division, scored the goals in the first division, won the Premier League in the end, FA Cup, all the stuff. But at the same time, I just think that I was just a bit too late for Champions League-y stuff. And, you know, I was just a bit too late for that era. And so I never, ever thought I caught up. I never ever thought I caught up, but I was always, always trying to catch up. And I think that's what drove me. That's what drove me.
So quickly, finally, on the Arsenal thing. Okay, so Oba leaving. Sad on a personal level?
Very sad on a personal level, because I think he's made for us. If you've got Oba, then you kind of gear everything into, you kind of structure everything for him to just do what he does. I remember not long ago I was watching his goals for Dortmund, and it's just all geared to him. Bam.
Yep.
So I'm devastated that we couldn't do that for him, but I feel you have to, as much as I love him, I have to back the manager, because he's our manager now. Yeah, and he's taking the chart and doing what he's doing, and I'm going to back him with that. So I have to say, in the current climate, and we don't know the other half of the story, I have to go with the fact that the manager's done what he's done. I agree with him moving on, because I think it's best for everybody.
One of those, like, potentially could be tricky to navigate in the final few months of the season, but in the long term, actually frees up quite a lot of wiggle room for Arsenal to make more moves and add to that squad.
And I think that's, at the end of the day, Ryan, it comes down to what's best for the team and the club.
Yeah. That's, and you and I are softies, right? And with stuff like this, it's the same with Mesut Ozil. Like, such great players for us at certain points in their careers. It would have just been really lovely to have them leave. Kind of like the way Aaron Ramsey left.
Yes, it was beautiful.
He got a real send-off, you know? Just quickly, because a lot of people might be thinking, like, why aren't you talking about the rest of transfer deadline day? Moose and I are going to do that on Stadio.
Yes.
On Thursday.
Okay, yes. Nice one, right? So that's why we're doing that.
We're going to do our transfer deadline roundup. Yeah. One final thing on with the Aubameyang situation now, final. There's no more talk about it. There are no more questions. There's no more speculation. There's no more kind of like, oh shit, is he going to come back in within the squad? It's done. And actually, maybe we as fans outside of the football club sometimes maybe underestimate how important that a situation resolved, whichever way it is, can be. And I think that now it's a big few months for Eddie, for Laka, for Pepe, and for Martinelli as well, I think if Martinelli gets
for Emil as well.
Well, I think, to be honest, I think those guys are going to be fine, because Emil's slightly different in terms of the need for goals. He will score goals,
it's not his primary goal to do it. He's got to continue to create and do what he does, but he's now been given the, you're there. You're a first team player. We're in. We're all in on you. And the moves that we're making is because what we've seen from you, what we've seen from Bukayo, what we've seen from Gabriel. So we're all in. That's the kind of pressure, or that I never actually got that said to me by Arsenal at any stage. But you realize, they're depending on me now, and I hope they recognize that.
It's like when you asked me to do Wright's House, I was just like, oh shit, okay. Shit.
Here we go. Okay.
It was like my dream. I told you.
It's like me. I couldn't find my way to my dream. I was fucking lost.
It's like me being late, but I wonder if Mikel's going to find me. Maybe I'm next. Maybe I'm frozen out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, man. I want to ask you something.
Yeah, go on, bro.
Sunday night, 6:30 p.m. ITV. Right. Bournemouth versus Boreham Wood.
Yes, bro.
Can I ask you about this? Because there's something special going on, right?
Yeah, go on.
You did a shoot the other day up there.
Yes, man. It was with my guy, Adrian Clifton, who I'd done a television show in, what was it? I think it would have been 2011, maybe. Something like 2011. And it was a show called Football Behind Bars. I remember when it first came out, it was like people thinking, oh, Ian Wright's going to prisons, see if he could find the next Premier League player. No, I fucking wasn't. I used football to try and let these guys understand that your life can be different. And the way I wanted to use football and everything that football gives you, communication, you know, team spirit, being with each other, helping one another, is what I used in this prison show. And so that's what we went in there. And I met a guy called Adrian Clifton, and it was brilliant. It's like, you know, he's somebody that I've been in touch with ever since. And obviously he played in the FA Cup, came on, he scored 2 goals in the FA Cup playing for Boreham Wood. And, you know, it's come out that, you know, he was in this show. It's turned his life around. We're talking about somebody that was, again, born in just in the wrong environment, you know, a victim of his circumstances. And he went the wrong way after being at Arsenal from the age of 11 to 14 and then came out and then bam, went down the wrong path, went in prison a couple of times, bam, bam, bam. And then we met in prison, spoke. And then, you know, obviously he's come out of prison. He's turned his life around. He's playing football. He's playing for Boreham Wood. He's a beautiful guy. He's a wonderful guy. And we had an interview just talking about his journey and what's happened and how tough it is and how easy it is for people to just look at that kind of name and that kind of person on paper, what he's done, and totally turn your back on that person. That person needs another chance. He's got, and what's great about him getting another chance is that he's recognized. He's recognized. Mm. And now, you know, he's on the right path. And it's very emotional, simply because obviously me going into prison when I was like 19 for driving offences, it was almost like a dip your toe in the water. It's not like I was a criminal, as a thief or anything, but that you can end up in a place like that. And I remember thinking, there's no fucking way I'm going to end up in a place like this. And just having that 14-day experience in there, going in there and explaining to them, I know what it's like when they close the door. You know, you put this charade, this face on, because you're walking around and you have to be protective of yourself. You have to make sure that, you know, no one takes liberties with you and all the bollocks that goes with being in jail. But when they close the door, you fucking cry. Well, I did. They realized that's not where they want to be. And, you know, the show tried to explain that to people. And like I say, I'm pleased because he's come out the other side, and long may it continue for him.
How's he feeling now? Like, you know, obviously with a big FA Cup tie.
I had to explain to him, listen, no one, apart from you guys, are expecting you to win this game. Bournemouth will try and do a professional job. They've got Scott Parker, and they're flying. Bournemouth are flying, but this is the FA Cup. It doesn't make no difference what you're doing in respect to flying, right? The fact is that if you go there and you lot are together, you defend, and you know what I mean, you're ready to go, someone takes the chance, the magic can happen. It's up to you. Mm. But you've got to go into that game knowing that you lot deserve to be there. And so play how you play. Yes, they're meant to be better than you, but let them prove it. Let them prove that they're better than you. Don't give them an easy ride. That is the attitude you're going to have. And if you beat them, you're going to have it twice as much in the next game. And if you go past the next game, you're going to have it 3 times as much. There's no easing off. If you want this, you're going to have to earn it.
I like that.
That's what I said to him. You're going to have to earn it. And this, and when you, as you're going along, it gets more and more emotional. It gets more and more emotional. It's amazing. That's
Sunday night in the UK.
Yes. Yeah.
ITV.
Yeah.
You're not doing it, are you?
I'm not doing that because I'm doing Man United against Middlesbrough and I'm doing Liverpool against Cardiff. Can you imagine if I was doing that game and then it's 0-0 and then, you know, Ivory's playing, or let's not, he comes off the bench and scores the winner. That would be it. I just drop the mic, bam, go and leave. I just, when they came back to say, Ian, you must be so proud, I go, Bam, mic drop, see you later. I'm going to see him. That's what the FA Cup's about. That story. How are you going to get a story like that?
And does the whole pointing at righty, and so when they usually run over to the coach, he actually just points to you, jumps the barriers, he's in your arms, and you're like doing the... Remember I got that video of you and Musa the first time we met when we were watching when Pepe's free kick went in the Europa League. I filmed Pepe's free kick going in, you went top left, and he puts it in, and then I slowly pan round, and it's just you and Musa with your arms around each other just jumping up and down. Before we go, should we answer a couple of questions? We put a thing out for some questions.
Yeah, we did. We got some good ones, didn't we?
Yeah, let's do it. We've got time for a couple of things.
Yeah, let's do them. I love Stadio Mailbag. I love it. The question, you have to go to, I have to put on my mastermind cap and my university challenge. The questions are magnificent.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I mean, we don't write the questions, but we just...
No. The people who come in, I love them.
Let's have this one from Bobby Subak.
Hey, Bobby Subak, what's up? Let's do this.
We're going to touch on more of this on Stadio, but for now, which player are you rooting for the most to regain their form or potential World Cup places with a new squad? Donny, Dele Alli, someone yet to move. Well, this was before the deadline, so now we know.
Wow. Donny van der Beek.
Yeah?
Donny van der Beek. Obviously, I've got a connection with him through Dennis, through his daughter, his wife, or his wife-to-be, you know, and... I'd have to say Dele as well because of my connection with Dele from way back. But I'm going to go with Donny because, you know, the move from Ajax to Man United was a massive move and a great move. And we're all thinking great things that he was going to do. It hasn't happened. And I know that there's an unbelievable player in there. So with Frank taking him and Dele, you know, I saw Musa say Frank. Was it Musa Mayoa saying Frank's reincarnated?
He's trying to give birth to himself.
When he signed Dele. When he signed Dele, you know, getting into the box, ghosting. And Donny van der Beek, to be under Frank,
All of a sudden, that Everton midfield looks very different.
It's looking very, very different. And so I'm hoping that that can work for him. He's going to need a bit of time. But then again, I hope that he doesn't need time so as he could show, just like when Jesse came on, went to West Ham and just was blasting. I hope that Donny does the same. So as we could see that those people, what they've done to that guy in the last couple of years is wrong. So I'm hoping for Donny van der Beek.
It's a tricky one.
Dele as well.
I mean, do you know what?
What about you?
The one that I'm really, really, genuinely over the moon happy for is Christian Eriksen.
But I've got a fingers crossed vibe with that.
But like, I mean, but that's not really part of what this question is. But like, we'll talk about that more on Stadio because I just think that like, he's back. This is incredible.
Unbelievable.
Like, I'm so happy for him. And also because of his condition, you would have thought that like, they would have been hyper, hyper precise.
With everything. To even get there, yeah.
I mean, from a football point of view, the two that he mentioned and the two you said there are like true as well, like Dele and Donny. I'm intrigued to see what Brian Gill does at Valencia.
Wow, because it's Spurs, it just didn't happen.
No, and I think Spurs have had a really smart window, actually. Like Kulusevski, for example, is such a good signing. And also Bentancur as well. Bentancur. Those two are like really, really handy signings for now.
Yes. You know what? I'd heard a lot of Tottenham fans that were going crazy that they're not trying to get Tariq Lamptey.
Well, I mean, as two Arsenal fans, I'm quite happy.
I'm quite happy as well because like, I literally cannot believe that no one has tried to prize that man out of Brighton.
But remember though, how happy he was about that move because all of a sudden he was playing all the time and looks like he really enjoying his football. And I really think Graham Potter's building something at Brighton. So I think at the moment, if you're best someone like Tariq Lamptey, stay put.
But the thing with him is, I remember he made his debut, came off the bench for Chelsea, and he was literally the best player on the pitch. And you got to understand that the only reason why this guy is not playing for Chelsea is because Reece James is there. Reece James is the person that stopped him.
Dude, there's an essay to be had about young players making debuts against Arsenal and it being the best debut of all time.
Unbelievable.
Let's wrap on this one because this is a fun one. Emily Oram.
What's Emily saying?
Emily says, I'd like to know how you watch a football match knowing that you're going to be analysing / talking about it. Wow. I'm sure it'll be different between how, for example, Wrighty does it on Match of the Day and how Ryan does it for Stadio. But do you take loads of notes or just bullet points, watch highlights, etc.? Now, I'm really interested in this because I think we have to... I mean, you actually do it. Like, you know, people are watching you talk about big stuff on prime time.
You know, the thing is, Wright, is that one of the things I have to do when I'm watching it is I have to see it from a tactical point of view.
Tactical cam.
Yeah. And that is the one where you can see the whole pitch, ladies and gents, right down the side. So you can see where the spaces come and the spaces go. And you can see the shape of the team. And I, to a certain extent, I can't watch a football. If I watch a football match now, it's very hard to zone in if I'm not watching it for analytic reasons, because it just kind of like fades into one. You just go, oh, look, he's too far back. Oh, he should have pushed in there. Oh, too much space in the midfield. Oh, that striker's going to run offside. Oh, you know, you can't watch like a film director. Once the film's done, he'll look at it and say, oh, I should have had that light there. I could see that there. You can't watch it without analysing it. And I watch a game from a striker's point of view. So I work it from me being a striker, what that midfielder should have done, what that defender should have done to give it to the midfielder so that midfielder would have time to bring it to me. So then in different segments of that, I can say, well, that defender, he's got to receive that. He's got to open his body quicker so as then he could get the ball to me, because the longer he's taken to open his body, the midfielder will be marked. So you watch and you see things like that. And then I say, well, so now the striker can't make that move because he's not going to give it to him. So now he can't do that move. So now they're going to have to pass it back. And so you watch for things like that, Ryan, and you think, oh, that's why they're not progressing the ball. And then you watch it and the other team have obviously like they've pushed on them, but they're setting a trap before they push on them. So the midfielder might think, oh, I've got time. But then if they target, let's for instance say, I remember when we used to play against Sol Campbell. So what we used to do with someone like Sol Campbell is you used to wait to the point where, okay, let them build up. And then when it gets to Sol, make sure everybody's tight on everybody. Because then you want the player, and Sol's a great player, don't get me wrong, but you'd rather Sol have the ball than fucking Rio Ferdinand, you know, because then you give him the opportunity to look up, nothing's there, then bam, you could close that down. That's where you put the pressure on. Those are the things you look for. I remember I used to say to players, and I probably said it to Sol, and then when he does it, he'll give the ball away, and I say, I fucking knew it. The boss said to fucking play on you.
Oh, you and your trash talking. that was one of the first things we'd ever chatted about the first time we met.
But I would say it to Sol like this, Jesus Christ, the boss was right in our team meetings.
you're bad. You're bad.
But those are the things, and so...
So that's the kind of thing you specifically look
that's
for.
That's what I look more. For. And the same with a striker up front who... We know like Lukaku wants to get the ball and run at people. So we know that Lukaku, he said it himself, his main strength is not back to goal, holding it up. So what you do is you set up the situation where the ball can go into Lukaku, but then you've got midfielders getting around him because the pressure will be, his touch might go, then you nick the ball off of him. So those are the things you look for.
But when you're actually like watching, say a match a day, you're in there all day, you're watching the stuff ready for that night and you've got all the screens going. Do you make specific references for certain points of games and be like, oh, can I get that?
Yeah. Because
closer detail or like, what's your, do you have like quite extensive notes or do you just say, I want specific notes on X, Y, Z and the rest I'll remember?
No. What will happen is, so you'll try and see a pattern of play. Like if the wing backs are getting in too easy. So then you say to the researchers who clip it up, can you keep an eye on Reece James and why he's getting in so easy? And then what you'll do is you'll say, so let's say the game starts at 3:00, obviously. Then you just look at it and you say, time code 3:07, Reece James, bam. And then you say, time code 3:27, this and that. And so then what happens is that you build it that
way.
You
build like an archive.
So you build it. So they say, okay, so this was the pattern. This is what was happening. And then you say time code, like for instance, whoever the left wing back is or the left midfielder who's not getting across in time, you look how many times he doesn't do that and you see time code such and such at 3:46 or 3:48 whenever it's happening. So you get a couple in the first half and then ideally what you want is for Reece James to go forward and get into his position, then score. Then you say, well, the reason when this was happening, and then bam, that's how you do it. But sometimes the games can be shit and you don't see anything. And that's when you have to be creative.
My process is, I think a little bit different because obviously you're in a very high pressure environment on the flagship national highlights show of the biggest and best league in the world. I am, you know, sometimes watching Paderborn Werder Bremen on a Friday night. So my process is a little bit different. I think we spoke about this on Stadio, but I think that I like to build more of a, as opposed to a week by week, I try and like accumulate more of an overall vibe of what's going on somewhere. So I watch as much, like sometimes, I remember you, me and Carl did an episode and we were talking about how many games is too much on a weekend, full live in, and when I told Carl how many I usually watch, he kind of looked at me being like, nah man, you're not right.
You can't do that. Fucking too many games, right?
But also that's because we're not a club specific podcast. We're not a fan podcast.
Yeah.
We like to be able to feel like when we go specific on a certain club that we're doing it justice and we're not doing this throwaway. Because so much punditry
is
completely unresearched. And I think I think fans of clubs outside of the big however many clubs are willing to accept that maybe their clubs might not get the amount of airtime that huge clubs get. However, when you do talk about those clubs, you have to treat them with the respect and the intent that you do with those big clubs. So for example, I might not watch a Atleti live every week if they're based on, because Moose and I look at the fixtures and we kind of have a sense of where we might go on Monday's episode when there are weekend games. So I'll be like, all right, well, I might want to catch that anyway just because I want to see this game. But we're probably going to talk about Napoli-Atalanta. That looks like it might be a good one. So I'll make sure I watch that. I'll keep an eye on the rest of them. Atleti are playing, I don't know, Elche at home. I might not bother with that this week. But at least with those kind of clubs, check in live at least once every 2 weeks because I think it helps you build an overall picture. And I think for me, put it this way, I feel like, imagine each club that we cover is like a jar, but there's a hole in the bottom that's draining out. I want to make sure that everything's topped up to a certain level throughout the season. And sometimes I'll, you know, might go a few weeks without watching someone. So I'll be like, right, I have to watch the next few games, or I'll go back and watch games when I've got time. But I don't really take notes or anything. I'll look at some specific statistical stuff because I think sometimes you have to be skeptical of what your eyes are telling you as well. That's really interesting, is like, when you find statistical anomalies that also match up with your eyes or that don't match up with what your eyes are telling you. It's never about being right for me. It's never really about, I told you so.
Yes.
We always get things wrong and we always pull each other up on it when we do.
I like when people pull me up on certain things.
But yeah, I think for me, my general approach is more like watch as much as possible, take on as much as possible and form your own kind of like, you know, because sometimes I might really watch four or five live games of a club in the of a team in a row before I really feel like, okay, I've kind of, I feel like I can go in a little bit more on them now.
I like to watch the game as well. Some of the times, when it's live, but then I'll record it and watch it in its live form without hearing what people have commented about it.
Yeah, or commentary off.
Yes.
It's really good.
Yeah.
The Premier League games in Germany, you can actually switch the commentary off and you just have no commentary whatsoever.
I think that's great. And it's not, and obviously a lot of people on Twitter like just hammer people about, oh, I fucking rather have it off. And that's fine. Just turn it off. Because I like watching it and thinking, oh, what's happening there?
Yeah. Thanks everyone who sent us questions. We'll do some more questions in a future episode.
Yes.
I'm going to bounce, man. I need to let you do your day.
Listen, man, if you got to go, I was ready to talk all day. Right, well, can we speak later? Because I want to continue just talking.
Yeah, man. I'll give a shout later.
Let's talk later, man.
All right, man. Much
thanks
love.
A lot, bro.
Good to see you.
I love you, man.
Love you too.
Bye, bro.
Bye.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Really appreciate it. Might have been a bit Arsenal-centric, but hey, you know what I mean? Kind of Arsenal kind of people, but... hope, like I say, you enjoyed listening. But we'll speak again next week, right? Take it easy. Be safe.